Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, Matt Damschroeder, director of the Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services, joins us to talk about the warning signs of elder abuse and what the state of Ohio is doing to help. Jay Fox will chat with Dwayne Casares, the CEO of Directions for Youth and Families, about the organization's purpose, history, and services. He'll also talk with a veterinarian about how to make sure pets stay safe in the heat. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective, June is World Elder Abuse Awareness Month, and national studies show as many as 1 in 10 seniors are victims of elder abuse. Last year, Ohioans made more than 38,000 referrals for elder abuse. Director Matt Damschroeder with the Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services joins us today on Columbus Perspective to talk about resources available to those in need, signs to look for among your loved ones, and how you can help someone struggling. Director Damschroeder, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, I guess a good place to start is with a definition. What is elder abuse?
Well, elder abuse is a term that's used globally that includes various forms of maltreatment to which vulnerable adults might be subjected. It includes, you know, certainly physical, sexual, and psychological abuse, as well as neglect. But it also includes financial exploitation. And, you know, really an elder can be subjected to abuse from individuals they know, caretakers, or really anyone that interacts with that person.
What are some signs of elder abuse that we should be on the lookout for with friends and loved ones?
Well, in the category of physical abuse and neglect, things like unexplained injuries, changes in behavior, neglect, things to look for would, you know, might be cluttered or filthy living environment. Certainly in the category of financial exploitation, we would look at things like, you know, unpaid bills or new credit cards, increased cash withdrawals, or anything in the financial space that would be unusual for that individual.
Such a vulnerable population. It really is very striking that things like this can actually happen, but unfortunately they do. And with that in mind, what are some of the resources that are available to those that need help with this?
Well, in each of Ohio's counties, the County Job and Family Services Department can help and coordinate resources. You know, one of the things that we always look for, particularly for individuals who might live alone or have various other kinds of abuse at the hands of someone else, is, are there things that we can do of the preventative nature to help that individual? So can we connect them with resources, around independent food stability, connect them with Medicaid or Medicare resources, and those kinds of things. So, you know, often when we think of abuse or neglect of a person, you know, we think about the child's services, the children's services space. And, you know, often the result in that situation is that that a child is placed in foster care. Well, you know, we don't really do that with adults because they're presumed to be competent. And so we also want to respect that individual's independence. And so often what happens is providing resources to that individual so that they can continue to age in dignity.
Director Matt Damschroeder of the Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services with us today talking about elder abuse. June is World Elder Abuse Awareness Month, and referrals to Adult Protective Services rose more than 5% in Ohio last year. Director Damschroeder, why is this actually a good thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And when you look at the number on its face, you would say, well, this is a bad thing. But a lot of what has been happening in this space over the last number of years is to reduce the stigma associated with reporting suspected adult abuse. And so, as we run campaigns, bring awareness to this, through things like the attention that we do in this particular month, individuals feel more comfortable reporting it themselves and see things or more aware of things that are happening around them to their loved ones or individuals in their community. So I think because of we're reducing the stigma around reporting suspected elder abuse, that number is increasing.
So if someone does suspect a case of elder abuse, what should they do first?
Well, the number one thing is to let the proper authorities know. And so anyone can report elder abuse by calling 1-855-OHIO-APS. That's 1-855-644-6277. Or they can visit agesafelyohio.org. It's important to remember that callers do not have to provide proof of what they are seeing or suspecting, and they can certainly choose to remain anonymous in reporting that concern.
During World Elder Abuse Awareness Month, we are talking with Director Matt Damschroeder of the Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services. We've gotten some great information from you today, Director. What can everyone do who's listening to help combat elder abuse in Ohio?
Well, the most important thing is to be aware of the individuals in their family and their individuals in their community, to be cognizant of those types of things that would constitute elder abuse. And when you see something or suspect something, to say something by calling 1-855-OHIO-APS.
As in most cases, if you see something, say something. Director Matt Damschroeder of the Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services, I thank you so much for joining us today on Columbus Perspective with this important information.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, if any senior in your life needs help, please call Ohio's Elder Abuse Hotline at 1-855-OHIO-APS. That's 1-855-644-6277 or visit agesafelyohio.org.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
Today we welcome Dwayne Casares. He is the CEO of Directions for Youth and Families to Columbus Perspective. I'm Jay Fox. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jay.
So Directions for Youth and Families offers programs that provide community-based treatment and prevention services that emphasize commitment to the family, school, and work. And this is an organization, correct me if I'm wrong, that has roots going back to the 19th century?
Yeah, 1899 is actually when the first Florence Crittenden home was opened up as a home for unwed mothers. The name went away from Directions for Youth and Families. We just brought it back when we built the new Crittenden Center and opened that up in November. It's been a collection of an awful lot of mergers, friends and family, one-to-one, short-stop teen drop-in center, and now we're just the collective Directions for Youth and Families.
So when you think about what characterizes your agency in the mind of the public, what do you think the first thing that someone would say when asked, have you heard of Directions for Youth and Families?
Yeah, I think one of our most unique things is all of our services are outreach. So we serve over 7,000 kids in the Columbus area. And we all do this in the community. So we have licensed social workers and counselors and therapists who actually go into the home to provide our services. We don't want transportation or child care to ever be a barrier to good mental health treatment. The second part is that all of our services are free. So I think those two things are huge. But really, for all the people that we serve, all the kids and families that need the support.
So there's a wide variety of services that you offer in that regard. You mentioned mental health. Is that both assessment and counseling?
Yep. We start every treatment process with the full biopsychosocial diagnostic assessment. We make a diagnosis and develop the treatment plan from there that's individualized to each person's situation, and then we move forward from there. So that's in our treatment programs. Some of our trauma programs are geared towards something a little bit different. So Promises is for survivors of sexual abuse. COMS is children of murdered parents and siblings. Our VOCA program deals with situations of domestic violence. So all of those also have a group component to it, as well as a family counseling component to it. So depending on the presenting problems, we change up the services to address it accordingly.
Do you have an affiliation with a psychiatric hospital or treatment facility when folks need inpatient care?
No, we do not. Our intake, if that gets to that point, we try to do everything we can to prevent it. We're not truly equipped to deal with like schizophrenia and things like that. So these are things that we will send elsewhere, typically to the community mental health centers. We do more traditional things along lines of ADHD, anxiety, depression, mood disorders, and then all the specialty trauma programs.
Sexual abuse survival is a very difficult subject to tackle. We did a story today specifically about a sexual abuse investigator, a nurse that actually exists now with University Hospitals up in Cleveland. To what degree do you deep dive into those issues?
All the way. It's a, it's interesting. In our Promises program, almost probably half the referrals in our Promises program did not enter our agency because of sexual abuse. It has typically been another behavior. And then as we develop the therapeutic relationship, we end up finding out, or they end up disclosing once they feel a safe environment and trust, that all of this does stem from untreated trauma of sexual abuse. So that is an individual, family, and group program. I'll tell you a unique thing that happened with the group program, and this probably happened maybe 10 years ago, and it's a component of our program now. We always have a celebration at the end of group. So all the kids, you know, when they first go to group, even though they know they're going to be with other people who experience the same thing, it's terrifying. But then once they start working as a collective together through their healing process, at the end, we have a celebration. And it's probably 10 years ago that the group, and we're talking about kids that are average about 7 or 8 years old. They were talking about how their first group was compared to their final group, and how frightening it was in the beginning, and how much they are, you know, really united in the end and helped each other in their healing. And they wanted to end up asking, would it be possible for us to write letters to the next group to let them know it's going to be okay? Which was stunning. I always tell our workers, we all got our bachelor's, master's, and PhDs. We think we're so smart. And it was these kids who came up with one of the most greatest parts of this program. And we still do that to this day.
Peer-to-peer support is extremely important. And we talked about sexual abuse. At some point in time, the sexual abuse survivor may end up in a situation where they find themselves having problems later in life, even if that abuse has happened earlier in their life. To
yes.
What degree does that impact your teen parenting classes?
There are so many different things that come up during the process. So it's not just sexual abuse. It can be many other untreated trauma issues. And we just have to address it as it comes. I don't know that it's real prevalent in our teen parenting program any more than it is any of our other programs. So we deal with it as it comes.
Well, and not everything that you do involves trauma. For example, kindergarten readiness and traditional parenting classes are two examples of things that are necessary but may not have that negative component to it.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. We have a whole slew of educational programs. So we have treatment, education, and then we actually have two after-school centers as well.
When we talk about life for kids who are having problems, that line of demarcation of the age of 18 seems to be a pervasive problem in every county in the state. What do you do for folks that are over 18 but perhaps under 25 that may still need that kind of help?
Yeah, well, we got rid of that 18 line, whatever that is, a long time ago. We actually serve adults as well. It's just the majority of the people we serve are kids. So it doesn't matter to us what the age is. Actually, when we look at some of our programs that are serving that we call youth programs, we kind of extended that to 24 anyway. It's a I don't know who decided these lines. They make no sense in treatment, so we ignore them.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Do you teach these individuals how to be ready for independent life? For example, how to balance a checkbook, how to pay your bills, how to cook a simple meal, how to do laundry. Is any of that a part of what you offer?
Yeah, that's not necessarily in our treatment programs, but it is a big part of our after-school programs. We are actually looking at launching a couple other things that are going to start moving a lot of our kids who may not be ready for college into trades, and using virtual stuff to actually see what their interest is and explore those things. We have a partnership with Delta Bank that we are going to start bringing in financial literacy classes. These are all things that are just critical life skills that the kids that we serve need.
We've been talking with Duane Casares, who is the CEO of Directions for Youth and Families here in Central Ohio. And would you like to give a website if they'd like more information?
You can check us out at dfyf.org, or you can put in Directions for Youth on YouTube. We have many videos about the services that we provide.
Great. Duane, thanks for speaking with us today. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Jay Fox.
The American Veterinary Medical Association is the nation's leading advocate for the veterinary profession. They represent more than 105,000 members, protecting, promoting, and advancing the needs of all veterinarians and those that they serve. Dr. Rena Carlson is the president of the organization, and she's with us today to discuss pet heat safety. Pet heat safety. It is hot in Central Ohio, and a lot of folks have animal friends in their backyard. What can we do to keep these animals safe?
So the first thing to do, you know, prevention is the key, right? We really need to recognize what's happening outside so we can do everything we can to keep our animals safe. And obviously, we need to get them outside. Everybody needs fresh air. They need to get out to the lawn and do their duty. So make sure and do things early in the morning, later in the evening when it's really cool or cooler, I guess I should say. Also, really think about your pet and what their needs are. You know, how much exercise do they really need? Can you do things in the house? You know, throw the ball down the hall or, you know, have puzzles for them to do. What can we do inside to keep them really occupied and stimulated both physically and mentally so that we're not outside in the heat?
Now, most of what we're talking about involves dogs, but you know that Ohio is and has a lot of rural areas. So there are other types of pets that Ohioans have. They could have horses. They could have goats. They could have cats that wander outside. How do we protect pets other than dogs?
So as far as our large animal friends, plenty of water is one of the most important things you can do. Really good fresh water and easy for them to get access to. If you can, definitely provide them some shady areas so that they can get out of the heat. Animals are pretty smart. They know what to do as far as getting in a position that, you know, they're not going to get heat stress. And make sure that you're not moving them around, exercising them. Make sure you're not creating more heat for them during those hot parts of the day. So don't go riding your horse, you know, in the middle of the day. Just let them stay in the shade, plenty of water. And, you know, again, try to do those things. If you need to move them somewhere or, you know, you need to get out and ride a little bit, do it super early in the morning or, you know, later in the evening.
Is it safe to take an animal swimming?
You know, again, it goes right back to your individual animal. Some animals are very acclimated to swimming and can do it very safely. Others, not so much. And also medical conditions, like if they have respiratory issues, heart disease, skin problems, you really need to check with your veterinarian to see what would be the safe thing for your animal. And then as we get into summer, water can have some dangerous things. We can have blue-green algae blooms in different places. There's Giardia. So you do want to be a little careful. Their dogs particularly are going to go out there and, you know, want to drink that water. So make sure you have plenty of fresh water so they're not as thirsty when you're out there near water. And if you're out in a boat, always have, I mean, it's not a bad idea to have a life vest for them, because if they happen to want to jump off and you know, struggling to keep their head above the water, or, you know, you're struggling to get them back in the boat, boy, having a life jacket on them can be, you know, a real, real safety issue.
Can you take a pet in a chlorinated pool, or is the chlorine dangerous?
That would really be irritating to their skin. Again, you don't want them drinking that. They really should stay away from chlorinated pools.
Now, one of the things that I've heard, and you have to confirm whether this is true or not, there's pet sunscreen. Is that true?
Sunscreen is actually quite safe, and you want to get the child's sunscreen that, you know, is safe for kids, because if a dog has abdomen that doesn't have a lot of hair and they're out there on their back or their ears, they're on top of their nose, they can definitely get, you know, get sunburned. So you don't want to put a whole lot on, because you really don't want them, you know, just licking everything off. But if you do put some on, go ahead and distract them and move them around a little bit, or play a game so that they're not just instantly wanting to lick that off. But sunscreen can be a valuable thing for them.
Now, not everyone has the blessing of having air conditioning. So for folks that are suffering without air conditioning, what can they do to keep their pets, whether it's a cat, a dog, a hamster, or even a turtle, what can they do to keep those pets more comfortable in a house that doesn't have AC?
If you can keep that air moving, a little bit of breeze can really be helpful to let them cool down. Once again, make sure they're not exercising. You're not playing games. You're not having them run around the house. The more active they are, they're generating a lot of body heat, and it's harder for dogs particularly to get rid of that body heat. So things need to be just pretty calm and lazy. Again, lots of fresh water. Make sure that they have easy access to water at those times when it gets really hot.
How do you know if an animal needs to go to the vet because of heat stroke or too much exposure?
So it can happen very quickly, and you don't have a lot of time. So it's so important to prepare ahead of time. Like I said, that's really the key. But if you get into a position where you're noticing kind of that frantic panting, or they act a little weak, that is critical time to get that activity stopped. You can put some cool water on them, get them in the shade, but it's really a good idea to get some veterinary care as soon as you possibly can if they really do start panting, because they do have a hard time getting rid of that body heat. they're just not as efficient at as, you know, as people are. So they can really get overheated very quickly, especially in these blistering temperatures.
Now, at the time that we're doing this interview in Columbus, Ohio, temperatures are in the upper 90s with heat indices that will exceed the 100-degree mark. And we know that this is not the only time over the course of the summer that we will face this level of heat. Do animals become conditioned to the heat, or is it just something that you have to address things as they happen?
They're not going to really become conditioned to the heat like they would cold. So it is important all through the summer to follow these safety tips and make sure that you are very mindful of where they're at, when you're doing things. Also, just even taking a walk on the sidewalk. I've seen burned paws from the super hot asphalt or even concrete. So you really want to be careful about trying to stay on grass or a place where they're not going to get burned. Gently touch the ground and see, you know, how hot is it? You know, that can really tell you a lot. And again, water, water, water. The more hydrated they can stay, the more tolerant they are. And then lastly, make sure and talk to your veterinarian. If you've got an older dog, if you've got a dog with a flat nose, maybe some respiratory or heart disease, skin disease, it's so important to make sure that you are getting the advice of your veterinarian on how to handle summer with your individual pet.
We've been talking pet heat safety with Dr. Rena Carlson, the president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. We thank you so much for being with us. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
Black lawmakers reasserted their commitment to ending the death penalty in Ohio. They took this stance against the death penalty as part of their news conference recognizing Juneteenth. The Ohio Legislative Black Caucus said it's time to dismantle what they call a flawed system. They're pushing for the state Senate and House of Representatives to pass bills that would repeal the state's death penalty laws. The companion bills would abolish the death penalty and require life sentences for those convicted of aggravated murder. According to the recent Capital Crimes Report, right now 119 inmates are sitting on Ohio's death row. The Legislative Black Caucus also pointed to other issues they say are impacting the black community unequally, including the jury pool, conviction and incarceration rates, and affordable housing. Meanwhile, a bill to add the use of nitrogen hypoxia as an execution method is making its way through the state house. Ohio hasn't carried out the death penalty since 2018. Governor Mike DeWine declared an unofficial moratorium on executions because the state can't get the necessary drugs for lethal injection. With the bill, nitrogen hypoxia would have to be used if lethal injection drugs were not available. The bill has the support of Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost.
This seems to be available, relatively straightforward, and we don't have supply problems.
Alabama used the nitrogen hypoxia method earlier this year, the first state in the U.S. to do so. Lawmakers are also considering a proposed law honoring 15-year-old Braden Marcus. Braden was an Olentangy High School football player who took his own life in 2021 when he became the victim of a financial sextortion scam. House Bill 531 would increase penalties for sextortion crimes, making it a felony with extended prison time. That bill had its second hearing in a House committee. Data shows between October of 2021 and March of 2023, the FBI and Homeland Security received more than 13,000 reports of financial sextortion involving minors. And in the same House committee, a bill that would help human trafficking victims move on with their lives. A Senate bill to allow survivors to expunge certain nonviolent criminal records just had its first hearing. Those in favor of it say a criminal record can be a roadblock for a job, housing, and educational opportunities. The bill has already passed in the Senate, but still needs to pass the House committee and a full House vote before going to the governor's desk for his consideration. state senators testified in favor of a bill that would change the nomination process for the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. They say this follows the House Bill 6 scandal involving First Energy. It has been called the largest bribery scheme in state history. State Senator Bill DeMora says the state wants to make sure the public can trust the agency and make sure something like House Bill 6 can never happen again. The former Speaker of the Ohio House pleaded not guilty to new state charges against him in that scandal. Larry Householder is currently serving a 20-year sentence for federal charges. He now faces state charges in connection to alleged theft in office and tampering with records. Two former First Energy executives also face state charges in relation to the bribery scandal. Chuck Jones and Michael Dowling both pleaded not guilty to multiple felony counts against them back in February. Former Public Utilities Commission Chairman Sam Randazzo was also charged, but he died by suicide in April. A trip to the hospital can be very expensive. State lawmakers are working to make sure you know how much it will cost you. The state Senate passed a hospital price transparency bill. It will basically let you know what's going to be on your hospital bill. This is so patients can find out in an easy way what they'll have to pay if and when they have to go to the hospital. The bill will require hospitals to comply with the federal price transparency rule enacted in 2021. It requires hospitals to publish a consumer-friendly list of charges for hospital services. They can meet that requirement if they use an accurate price estimator tool. It also allows patients to file complaints to the Department of Health for violations. If a violation is found, state penalties would match the penalties imposed by federal law, therefore doubling them. The bill passed in the Senate by a vote of 27-6. Because senators made changes to this House bill, it has to go back to the House to be reconciled. The Ohio Hospital Association says hospitals and health systems are working to comply with both state and federal price transparency policies. You can see the OHA and Ohio Children's Hospital Association's joint testimony on the bill in this story on 10TV.com. Another key issue lawmakers took on was the health and safety of Ohio's babies and new moms. The House passed a bill known as the Strong Foundations Act. The name of the bill really describes its goal, to give new moms and their babies a strong foundation that can lead to a healthy future. The bill passed in the House by a vote of 72-19. The bipartisan bill would provide support for mothers and children from birth to age 3. It would do this by investing $35 million over the next 2 years into several programs from health care to early intervention. It would address key issues, including maternal and infant mortality, pregnancy and parenting education, stable housing and child care services in underserved communities. Millions of dollars in funding was cut from the original bill, but co-sponsor Democrat Latina Humphrey of Columbus says it wasn't needed because it was covered in other ways.
Still a beautiful, vibrant bill that is going to help babies and children all across the diaspora from urban communities all the way to Appalachia. And so I'm very proud of the work that we've done with House Bill 7.
When you value life, you want to make sure that you protect it and help in any way you can.
Now, again, the bill passed in the House by a vote of 72-19. It now heads to the Senate. And Columbus City Council approved a grant extension for money that will go toward helping mothers quit smoking during pregnancy. Health experts say smoking during pregnancy is a large indicator of infant mortality. The extended funding is for the Moms Quit for Two program. It aims to reduce low birth weights and preterm birth rates and increase overall quit rates. The Ohio Department of Health awarded more than $150,000 to continue the program. Ohio is now receiving $27.7 million following a settlement with Johnson & Johnson. It's related to allegations that the company's marketing of baby powder and body powder products containing talc was not honest. The settlement is part of a $700 million deal with 42 other states. Johnson & Johnson has permanently stopped making, marketing, and distributing any talc-based baby and body powders in the United States. A second train route from Columbus to Chicago is now moving forward. This all comes just 8 months after Amtrak announced an expansion through Columbus. The Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, or MORPC, says the route would connect Columbus to the Midwest and eventually to Chicago. Ohio leaders say they're excited to bring more tourism through the area from outside of Ohio. They say this will help boost our local economy.
We also have business organizations, advocacy organizations, labor, cities, villages, counties, educational institutions. They're all pushing for this to happen. And what's exciting about it is they each see the benefits and how it could help their workforce, how it could help their students, how it could help their families.
Right now, MORPC is still coming up with a plan to get funding. Their current timeline would complete the line for riding by 2030. As AI technology quickly advances, Ohio's public universities, industry leaders, and state government agencies are looking to put the state in the best position to take advantage of it. The Inter-University Council of Ohio brought them all together for a symposium in the Statehouse atrium. The IUC represents Ohio's 14 public universities. Topics included dealing with the dark side of AI, such as cybersecurity threats, deepfakes, and disinformation. But organizers say the main focus of the symposium was how Ohio can leverage AI to advance the interests of the state.
Workforce, how are we developing the workforce for this burgeoning technology? What are we doing on our campuses? We have industry folks here who are going to talk to the university folks and say, this is where we can partner, this is what we can do. Likewise, what are we doing in the areas of research?
This was the first artificial intelligence symposium put on by the Inter-University Council of Ohio. Republican State Senator Michael Rooley will become the next U.S. House representative for Ohio. His win in Tuesday's special election expands the GOP's narrow majority in the House. Rooley will represent the 6th Congressional District in eastern Ohio. He defeated Democrat Michael Kripchak by 10 points. The election took place under congressional maps that the Ohio Supreme Court deemed unconstitutionally gerrymandered to favor Republicans.
Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is a common seasonal virus, but it can have major implications on a patient's heart health. Most RSV cases involve mild cold-like symptoms, but up to 160,000 adults are hospitalized each year for more serious cases, and RSV can escalate chronic health issues. If you're over the age of 60, talk to your doctor to find out if the new RSV vaccine is right for you, and learn more at heart.org/RSV.
Fans of CBS Sunday Morning will certainly recognize my next guest. Mo Rocca has been a correspondent on that show for the last 17 years. He's also the best-selling author of the book Mobituaries, and he just released his latest book. The title is Roctogenarians: Late-in-Life Debuts, Comebacks, and Triumphs. His publisher describes it as an inspiring collection of stories that celebrates the triumphs of people who made their biggest marks late in life. Mo and his co-author, Jonathan Greenberg, chronicle the stories of famous figures, including Colonel Sanders, Rita Moreno, and architect Frank Lloyd Wright, and not-so-famous figures such as Revolutionary War hero Samuel Whittemore, and even a tortoise who became a father for the first time at the age of 90. Mo is coming to Columbus on June 25th as part of his book tour. I'll have more information on that in just a little bit. First, though, I caught up with him this week by Zoom. And I started by asking him, what was the inspiration for the book?
Well, the genesis of the book is kind of back in 2015. I'm a regular panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, a news comedy quiz show on NPR. And we had Chance the Rapper on. And we were asking him, those of us on the show, were asking him goofy questions about how to write a rap. And I said at the time I was 46, I said, I'm 46. Am I too old to become a rapper? And it was kind of a sticky question. I was expecting an easy laugh and I kind of got one. But he took the question seriously without missing a beat. He said, I don't know. Some people might say you're too young or that it's too soon for you to become a rapper. And it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks that I had internalized this idea that even as young as 46, that I was somehow over the hill, because I think that message is so powerful and insidious that life has passed you by, you know, when you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s or 80s. And so my co-author John Greenberg and I wanted to look at lives now and in the past of people who had accomplished great things in the last third of their lives. And there were commonalities among these people. They simply refused to accept the idea that the last act of life, if you will, is a time for sort of winding things down. And they were future focused and living in the moment. They certainly weren't backward focused.
One of the interesting characters that you talk about is Harlan Sanders, who is, of course, well known as Colonel Sanders, the icon. Maybe people don't even realize that is a real person, but he really didn't become the colonel until later in life, right?
Yeah, so his story is great because Harlan Sanders was from Kentucky, and in the small town of Corbin, Kentucky, he was running a Shell gas station / chicken and biscuits joint. It did fine, and it served his delicious chicken, but the word really had not moved beyond the town. In the late 1950s, a highway came through Kentucky bypassing his restaurant. So the bottom fell out of the business. He sold it at a loss at auction. He was living off of Social Security. He was 66 years old. And so he got in his car with two pressure cookers and his secret recipe of 11 herbs and spices. And he started driving from town to town, restaurant to restaurant, cooking for total strangers, getting them hooked on his recipe. And within 8 years, when he was 74, he was the face of a Kentucky fried empire with about 800 outlets worldwide. And this is a story of people know it globally because people love fried chicken globally. But this is a person who built this empire at a time when he could have been subsisting off of his Social Security, but that wasn't good enough for him.
As I mentioned, you go way into the past, too. I'm going to do one more anecdote because I don't want to give away your whole book.
No, that's fine.
Samuel Whittemore is
fascinating. Story.
Yeah.
So Samuel Whittemore fought on the very first day of the American Revolution during the battles of Lexington and Concord in 1775. He was 78 years old. He was somebody who he had fought before for the British, but then he decided that he was on the side of the colonists of and wanted independence from the crown. On that first day of battle, he, forget the expression, picked off three redcoats before he had his cheek blown off and got stabbed in the head by a redcoat. Okay. He was left for dead, except he didn't die. He kept going. He lived another 18 years. I mean, this is a guy who had his face blown off and was stabbed in the head and kept on going. That is the spirit that we all need.
Now, as I mentioned, Mo is coming to Columbus as part of his Rocktogenarians book tour on Tuesday, June 25th.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV. From the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State, a new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.